Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is that time again, and you know it is because you hit play on your iPod. This is Larry Charles. We are bringing you the Game Dev Unchained podcast, and you know I never do this alone. Introducing, for the 26th time, my host, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Hey, welcome to this week's episode, everyone, and this is, of course, Brandon Pham. We have a very special guest, Colin Fogel. How are you doing, Colin?
I'm doing great. Hey there. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We've been looking forward to doing this episode for a very long time. We had to save it till the audience was like a good size before we dropped this one. Brandon, do you want to tell the good people why we've invited Colin here with us today?
Yes, of course. So as you may hear through the grapevines, once in a while, a game developer has a huge payday, which is bigger than the regular check, and it's one of those things that are attached to big projects. So it's not something very common, and I feel like it's one of those things like lost in the woods nowadays. But Colin's here to speak some part of it about his experience. But before we go into that, why don't you give us a little background, Colin, about your resume and everything?
Background. Let's start with college. There we go.
All right.
I grew up a total comic book fan. Definitely loved buying Marvel comics, everything. Definitely wanted to be a comic artist and actually go to the Joe Kubert School of Art and Design.
Yeah, is that in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents saying, no, that's a little too expensive, a little too far. So anyway, we had a very cool computer animation college from Phoenix come down to my art class, and I mean, next thing you know, I was doing a year and a half of computer animation.
Nice.
And yeah, it was funny because that was actually the first time ever I used a computer, believe it or not. I mean, hey. I had to learn from the beginning, you know, how to save files, how everything, like turn a computer on.
So they're like, so add your primitive, and you're like, wait, hold on a second. It says enter password. What does that mean?
It's not trusting.
So I definitely already like putting that in because I know some people, I think maybe they're a little scared of, you know, the future, this and that. And I like to let them know that I had no concept of how to use a computer until I went to school. It was just a year and a half. And I think the main thing with games, you know, computer animation, anything, is it's about passion, having a drive to create, and that'll help with learning programs, anything, because you definitely want to create. And you will use any tools necessary. And from there, yeah, that was the hard part, is after I got out of college, and I think every kid out there needs to know this, is that it took me 9 months to finally break in.
Right.
I mean, I meet a lot of people around here where it seems like right out of college they got their job.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a hard-learned lesson to know that you need to definitely keep updating your portfolio.
Right. I mean, like you mentioned, was this college in Phoenix, right?
Yes.
So was it more about the area too, like rich of game developing or what?
Actually, no. For me, I think like maybe most students, it was just what was ever close.
Right.
So Phoenix to me still felt like a world away, even though it was just a 2-hour drive. But,
oh, I see.
But yeah, it's kind of sad because nowadays, you know, obviously, I don't know if we're going off track, but computer animation schools, they now have like special courses for games, whatnot, how to build for games. And for me, it was just strictly here's 3D programs, here's 2D programs.
Right.
So I really had to learn on the job. But it was kind of funny because for me, I had to actually have my mom kind of help me out by talking with a headhunter finally and letting her know that her son doesn't interview very well. So for everybody out there, you know, when you get out of college, anything, that was one of the hardest things for me too, was interviewing and learning how to talk with people. And even though I didn't know anything about the game industry, you have to be personable, definitely show that you're willing to learn or whatnot.
So was the headhunter just giving you the introduction that helped you get to it, or was it?
Well, I think my portfolio definitely got me in the door, but then my interviewing skills was just atrocious. I mean, you know,
How bad was it, man?
I mean, I was 20 years old, and my mom's listening on the other line on the phone, which, like, freaked me out even more. But that's actually really key. You know, I think some people get over it easier. I'm sure Brandon, you seem like the type that had an easier job, you know, Tyrone. But for me, it was definitely, God, hard. You know, I feel like people maybe didn't take me seriously or whatnot. But
I mean, I feel what you're saying right now is more common among art students getting into the industry, like just having a hard time talking to people.
Yeah. I mean, that's why for me, when I would ever do interviews, you know, in the game industry, I would give people slack if they were nervous or anything, because I went through that. So I never held it against them. I just looked at their portfolio, if they were nice people, whatnot, you know, seemed like they wanted to grow or were curious about learning more. But yeah, basically, so my first job was 2K, you know, Visual Concepts. I worked on a 2K, what is it? NBA 2K1 was my first game ever.
Oh, nice. I had that game, man. I think wasn't that Allen Iverson on the cover?
Yes.
Yeah, see?
And
That's an awesome first gig, by the way.
but that was also not really where I wanted to wind up. You know, I mean, I
Right.
guess another point, I don't know if I'm sure you guys have talked about this on other podcasts, but you know, I can't do realistic games. You know, for me, that's just boring as hell. Like, I have to do creative, fun, fantasy, whatever. And so it was definitely a start. But like I said before, you got to keep updating your portfolios, keep working on stuff, showing what you really want to work on, and then maybe search out that studio.
Yeah. Well, can you expand a little bit on sports title? Because I don't think a lot of people know this difference with sports title versus other games. You know, is there a difference? What did you like? What you didn't like? The stability, the instability.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's definitely stable, or I would say it is if it's a studio like 2K where everybody loves their game and they can just update the art and roster every year, and that's good enough. But for me, it just wasn't stimulating enough. I mean, it was very basic, very, well, at least what I did. I'm sure for the characters and whatnot, there's a lot more detail, a lot more. I mean, God, getting the faces down and whatnot. But for me, doing arena work and all that, it was just pretty basic. And so I would go home and do a lot of my creative work. And that's what you see on my portfolio is, and one thing I usually tell people is when you look at my portfolio, 90% of that isn't from game studios that I worked at. As I didn't do anything I really wanted. You have an art director that directs you, and you don't get to really put you on there.
Oh
So.
man. So like, hey man, what'd you do last year, Fogel? Oh, I updated the grass texture. Oh, cool. What are you
Yeah.
doing this year? I'm updating the grass texture.
You went from 512 to 1024.
Yeah.
I mean,
Well,
but
how long did you work at 2K, just to give like a little background of how long this
that
was?
was 7 years.
7 years.
And yeah, I mean, I feel like most people too in this industry, they become, what is it called, complacent, or where they stay where they're at. And maybe they're scared to, you know, seek out or branch out, or maybe they don't feel they're capable of doing other work or whatnot. And for me, I felt like I just got pushed one day. I was just like, okay, it's time to make a move. I want more money, whatnot. And it was worth it. Yeah. In the long run. I mean, you know, we all know about Brandon and my last studio, but I think
Well,
overall it was worth
we as in the three of us, yes, but our
it.
audience.
Yes, to our audience, I worked with Colin on BioShock 2.
Did Larry work at
I
Tuga?
applied, but
Okay.
no, I didn't work there.
No. Yeah, Larry and I went to college together and we worked professionally.
Oh,
Actually,
cool.
so yeah, Larry and I went to college together. We worked at Call of Duty. We're currently working at Section, and before that, we worked over at Spark, and Colin was my lead over at BioShock at 2K, and we worked there for a while, and that's how we know each other.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So after 2K, Colin, where'd you end up going? Like that 7 years is a long time to say goodbye to everyone too. Like.
Yeah, well, that was 7 years, but then I wound up going to Secret Level in the city. And during my time in Secret Level, I realized that the games they were working on were really quickly, what is it? They had a really quick turnaround.
we weren't really making quality creative art. It was just kind of slapping it in there for movie studio, you know, movie studio video games. Mm-hmm. So that's when I actually branched out again and found the 2K Marin job, which was the BioShock 2. And I think people always get that confused because when I say 2K Marin, I don't think they immediately think of like the sports studio, and it's like, no, they have another separate studio there too.
Right, right. And it's the same building, right? Was it the same building that you worked before?
Yeah, same building. And then from there, that's where, things got a little rocky. You know, the game kept getting pushed. Like I always tell everybody, everybody and their grandma wanted to change everything about it. And so I knew that it was either not going to be a quality product, or it was not going to sell well, or they were not going to recoup the money. So I think, you know, knowing the industry and knowing what I've been through, it's, you have to be smart enough, know when to move on. And luckily I saw a former employee from 2K, Amber Long, who is now like a lead over at Toys for Bob. And we just took it from there. I just saw her at a little, you know, the picnic at the hangars that they have. And went over, interviewed, just saw the product. I mean, I had no idea what Skylanders even was. I think they were keeping it totally hush-hush. They didn't want to know that a video game was coming out with the first toys ever.
Right.
And it was funny because they were a little – I don't want to say ashamed, but they were a little
– embarrassed?
They were a little embarrassed. They knew that their tool set was a little old.
Right.
But for me, when I saw the game and the product and the style and everything, I think, you know, people sometimes get jaded by the, you know, the flash of all the normal max spec. Everything's got to be, you know, 10 different types of metal, everything. And I loved seeing hand painted classic game art. And it was right. It was just perfect. I was like, this is what I love doing. I do comic book work. I love hand painting in Photoshop. You know, my portfolio is pretty much hand painted work. So I don't know. I think I fell more in love with the style, and I had no idea. Like, I didn't really care about the game itself, as in, you know, oh, it has a toy to it. Oh, this might be huge. I was just like, it looks really fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And creative. And yeah. And God, it was the first studio where I actually got to do concept work for once and, you know, create my own levels, which was fantastic because every other studio, they, you know, some junior individual or something, you know, gets to pick the theme and the style, and or they have concept artists that draw every little thing out, or they give you photo reference. And this was kind of like, have fun with it. Just make it look good, make it fit our game.
Yeah. I just want to highlight one thing. Like, if you have not heard of Skylanders, it's a multi-billion industry now. It's just a game. It's a toy company kind of thing.
It started that whole genre, you know, of like collectible video game character toys.
Exactly.
Peripherals with an actual game device and video game software itself. I forget what the name of that subsection is, but yeah.
It's Toys for Game.
I think it's called Toys to Life or something.
Toys to Life.
There you go. Toys to Life.
I mean, I know that Disney is now our biggest competition. Mm. Like, you know, obviously, everybody loves Star Wars and Back to the
Future. Right.
And Lego is trying to get in on
it. Lego's trying to get into it. Like, Nintendo has their own, amiibos. But, like, what's really the highlight of this whole episode? It's like, imagine the first Call of Duty. Imagine the first Uncharted. Imagine the first mega franchise that became a mega franchise.
Yeah.
And before all that happened, it was usually a small group of developers. And so to me, like, Colin, like, as far as I'm concerned, you're like probably the last of that group. Like, because ever since then, ever since Toys for Bob, now that we have mobile games and we have like this indie developer scene where people would rage quit if they have those type of bonuses. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, they don't want their best developers quitting on them because they get a big fat paycheck, right? So usually now it's like very small chunks to keep you around.
Wait, and is it fair to say rage quit? Like, I imagine it would be the most glamorous quitting I've ever done in my entire life. It would be fabulous.
Well, right. Can I actually speak on that really
Yeah,
quick?
please, please. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to create controversy or anything, but yeah, even with that too, I mean, we did get, I guess the biggest bonus I've ever gotten in the game industry. But they also put a cap on it. You
Yeah.
know, they made billions and they were like, we're going to make sure you still can't afford a house in the Bay Area or
Yeah.
something like
They
that.
nipped just enough. Just
Yeah,
enough to keep
just
you around.
enough to definitely, help, I mean, it was nice to get people, something in their bank account, whatnot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still feel, I mean, anybody would. You still feel slighted. It's like, no, I love the studio. Why do you have to cap it? I'm not going anywhere. It's,
Right.
There's
there's
like,
a lot.
yes, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They want to guarantee it. Yeah.
And there are a lot of artists. I mean, I'm always shocked. There's a lot of artists on teams that don't really care to create their own stuff. So it's kind of like this,
Non-trusting kind of.
It's like, who is this based around? Like, what individual do you do?
Yeah.
But,
But,
I mean, you certainly don't have to say the numbers, but there is public information, especially,
the Call of Duty team.
the Call of Duty team in Call of Duty 2, if you have not heard of it, Call of Duty 2 sued Activision for unpaid bonuses, right? And it's
Oh.
completely public. And to give you an idea of what those bonuses were before these caps started to happen
Oh
was
no.
like a an animator of a regular animator around 3 to 5 years that worked at a Call of Duty studio on Call of Duty 2, around 60 developers pretty much, right? Made, I mean, why don't you guys guess? I think Larry knows, but why don't you guess, Colin, if you don't know?
Sorry, what an animator made on Call of Duty 2?
Was it now? Was it
Yeah.
Call of Duty 2 or wasn't it Modern
For
Warfare?
Modern Warfare, sorry.
Okay.
For bonuses?
For bonuses. What do you?
I really don't know what the overall money was that they made, but
You're gonna get it wrong.
you're gonna get it wrong.
You're gonna get it wrong.
I'm gonna say at least, God, must have been at least 40,000.
At least. You need to add
Man.
a couple zeros to that.
You would have
400,000?
been insulted if they gave you 40,000 and they gave
On a...
everyone else what they actually gave.
So an animator got $1 million.
Whoa! Oh my God.
Well, you gotta think about it, right? It's a $60 game.
So
They
you're
made
saying
a
I would
billion
say,
copies, right? And 60 developers. And
whoa.
so it was the first mega hit,
Yeah.
as far as we're concerned. And that was why they got upset that they didn't see any of that percentage. And this is all public information. You guys can look for it.
Yeah.
But like that's a fucking bonus, right?
Yeah, I think the studio
Yeah.
heads were, after the lawsuit was settled and they had to disclose like what the payments ended up being, I think the two studio heads were getting like 16 million apiece, something like that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, though. They had to sue to actually get this bonus,
Yeah,
or?
well, they were pretty upset that they were held back, right?
Yeah.
They there was some clauses set after, well, like, holy crap, there must be, we can't pay these guys that much, right? Even
Yeah.
though it's justified, like, they made the game, so therefore.
Yeah. Well,
So,
I definitely feel for the people that pay to like produce these
yeah.
games and put the money up, and I know, but at the same time, yeah, if you make an insane amount, there's an, I
Get
mean,
blown.
yeah. No,
there's
it's.
actually, yeah.
And I'd like to take just a minute to play like devil's advocate and come from the standpoint of the business. Now, you have this contract which you're supposed to uphold because that's what contracts are for, that is based on a percentage, right? There's no like number at the time because they're like, oh, we're gonna sell like maybe 5 million copies. So there's no need to even say if the game makes more than X because no one had seen 10X, 15X yet. You know what I mean? And so when the money came through and they do the math, they're like, yo, this
Holy
is
shit.
like, if we pay this out, the whole team has just hit the lottery. We will
And
never repeat this success because the whole team is just going to be done. You know what I mean?
yeah, I mean that I still feel like though for where we live and whatnot,
Oh,
like
yeah. Like $1 million isn't going to go that far.
I God, yeah,
That's a month's rent.
you could buy a fixer-upper for that here
Yeah, seriously.
and not even be close to the studio.
It's
Yeah.
like I got $1 million bonus and I am finally out of debt.
Yeah. Yeah, just to be
That's
clear,
it.
Colin's in the Bay Area, so
Yeah.
that's why he's speaking.
So a normal house for you, like 3 bedrooms in the Bay Area with a yard, we're talking like 700, 800,000, I'm guessing.
least.
More than that, if you don't want it, if you don't want it to be a dump. I mean, I looked recently, and between 750 and 850, it's a total fixer upper in Marin.
Yeah, that's the big.
But that's kind of sad to hear, because that means I got paid a very, very, very tiny bonus then.
Tiniest, but he's still good, dude.
And we were a small team, and we made billions supposedly off the top.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, like, you certainly got something that you weren't expecting. It was, like, way bigger than you thought it was. And the first, it was the first of a mega multi-billionaire franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other thing I really want to add, too, is, and I was really shocked about this, and there's, I wish there was something you could do about it, but, you know, the state of California right off the top takes 45%.
Yeah.
So when I heard what I was getting, I was like, yay. And then when I saw my bank account, I was like, I want to fucking rag Congress.
Like, where were you when I was staying up till 3 a.m. working on this? Where were you when I was...
I mean, I'm not a millionaire. So for me, I was like, this is a bit crazy. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Big money here. You could at least get, you know, take 25-30%, but
45%.
So that was a shock. So these people that made maybe a million, they probably got like 550,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always half, pretty much. Of
that is sad, though.
It is sad, but I mean, in all fairness, right? If we're talking from the company side, I mean, bonuses are bonuses. It's not a promise thing unless they put in the contract, right? Mm. I mean, they don't have to pay you a bonus. But like, what's great about them? It's a great way to motivate, incentivize people to stay longer. It's dangerous too, yeah. If you look at both ways, trying to promise them these bonuses as back pay. But in all fairness, though, like if you're one of 60 developers, and your game is a $1 billion game, mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like you deserve some of that, at least. To create like a lasting relationship between the developer and the publisher in some way, right?
Oh yeah. Just,
I mean, it obviously took a very talented group of developers, mm-hmm. and so if you want to keep that talent going, mm-hmm. that's how I think.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's kind of like, well, I mean, Larry.
Well, that's where I agree too. When I said that, you know, most people when they go home, they don't work on their own projects. Like mm-hmm. when they go to work, that's where they put it in, and that's how I feel. That's why I love being really involved, because I even go home and then draw and think about it all the time. And if I work at a studio where they don't want anything to do with me except modeling, mm-hmm. that's when it's kind of like, okay, well, I'll go start my own project. Yeah. Once you guys don't want to facilitate me, you know, pat me on the back, give me props when I do quality work, you know. And that seems to be a big issue in this industry too, is that
right.
It seems to be people that don't really realize that with your art team, you need to, especially if they're very enthusiastic, putting extra time and effort in, you got to kind of help them out and make sure that they can.
Yeah. I mean, the two greatest things that I admire about you, Colin, is you're obviously always working on your own stuff after work. And you had like that strong work ethic that you seemed to develop very early on in your career, right? Was it something that you suddenly decided, like, I got to do something or else I'm going to burn out, or...
For me, it was definitely, I always felt like I had to be a step above everybody. Like in the game industry, I always want to be in that top 10%, like in the artist range. Right. And so I feel, aside from just loving to do it and wanting to do it and creating my own product that could one day make me money, you know, going back to the bonuses, I'd rather take a bonus and have to do this route. But hey, you know.
Right, right.
Oh my God, where was I going with that?
Well, you've always had this kind of craftsman type of mindset. Like, no matter what type of art you're making, you're always making art. And even when you were working on Bioshock, even when you were working on like NBA games, eventually it took you to somewhere, a studio that you pretty much took a chance on, right? You didn't know it was going to be a big thing. I mean, but what drove you to it was because it was something you've always wanted to do, and you just thought of it as like as an art project that you want to be a part of, mm-hmm. instead of trying to like chase the money or anything.
Well, okay, yeah, actually that's what I was gonna say, my bad. Another reason about always working on, you know, work is, you know, every time I work on a piece I feel like it gets better, you know, every piece I do gets better, and then I would update my portfolio, and it seemed to make finding jobs a piece of cake.
Right.
And that's what I loved, is that anytime, you know, I lost a job or I wanted to leave, I could just send my website link, and that was it. I didn't have to print stuff out. I didn't have to send a, you know, tape of a port, you know, like a demo reel or anything. I was just like, I'm Colin Fogel. Here's my resume. Here's my link. Mm-hmm. And I would actually get calls back, you know, callbacks and whatnot. And yeah, land jobs. And I love that. And then I meet other artists where, you know, their portfolio is like 8, 9 years old with PS2 art, you know, and they're senior artists, this and that. And it takes them forever to find a job. And I'm like, okay, this is why I do it, you know, because right. I'm always prepared if anything happens. Well, that's another good point, too, is always do quality work that might last a few years.
Right.
Work on a piece where even in 3 to 4 years it still holds up. I mean, on my portfolio, I think I have a few of those where I'm like, yeah, that'll last 10 years, you know. but
I mean, like, is it like stuff that you see that people are just working on because of trends, in reaction to trends, or was it more like just fast, just throw it in there? Just to show that I can do sci-fi.
I think it's like most people, if you're really into something, or like for me, I love drawing, you know, knights in armor and whatnot. So I would just, every couple of weeks or months, I would do a new one and a new one. And I guess for me, it's just fun. You know, when I was bored growing up, you know, I loved watching TV and drawing. And I feel like kind of stuck with me, but at the same time it's my profession, so it's a double double home run almost. Mm-hmm. Where I love doing it and it's my profession, so it works out both ways.
Right.
And in the end it just motivates me, I guess. Yeah,
right. Having that, you know, just doing what you love to do. Mm-hmm. Right, it doesn't feel like work. And just I see a lot of artists too, and we kind of talked about this in the podcast sometimes, where people usually do artwork that is hot right now just to get a like,
mm-hmm.
versus them doing something that they truly want to do, and you can see the difference in their artwork, just the consistency. And with you, I see that a lot. Like, you just keep working on your own stuff, and it just usually just sticks around longer than others. I mean, the second thing I want to talk about that was really awesome is that I remember that time, like, we were working together at BioShock, and you were, I think you made a decision already, right? Mm-hmm. And you were telling the teams, like, I'm going over there to work on this kid's game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you caught it, but everyone around the table was kind of, like, giving a glance, like, because we were working on AAA games at that time, and, like, which was a huge thing. And now here you are hopping to make a kid's game. Mm-hmm. And even when you were over there, you were still trying to poach some of us, saying, hey, you know, why don't you guys come over here? We're working a kick-ass game. We're looking for people right now. And you know how many people regretted that as soon as Skylanders came out?
Well, I was also a little shocked because I looked at it as the team in general. Like, over there, their designers actually gray-blocked out their levels.
Right.
Now, we're at 2K. I don't know if anybody knew this about the team, but they refused to, I don't know if they refused to or whatnot, but they, it was at the end, they were just drawing out their levels on paper,
right,
top down graph paper. And I was like, when I went to Toys for Bob, I was like, oh, they require their designers to actually know basics in 3D. You know, who would have guessed? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was a little shocked about you guys, because it was a way simpler art style, more fun. You know, at 2K, the leads were leaning more toward less creative and more toward just photo reference.
Right.
I can't believe you guys didn't notice that.
Oh, I definitely noticed.
Because they were like, okay, what can we do? Well, we're not creative, so we'll just do the 80s. And then, okay, we're not creative, we'll do the 90s. And it was like, oh my God, you guys, we're artists, you know, with portfolios and creative stuff in it. Maybe you should ask us what we kind of are in the mood to work on too.
I mean, this is true. I mean, this can be like a episode in itself, like, at least among artists, right? To me, I feel realism is the most boring type of art, at least to me, right? Like, I would rather do any type of theme outside of photographs. Mm-hmm. Like, if it requires a concept artist to really bang it out, that is something definitely I like to do. Which is the reason why both of us went to BioShock, right? BioShock mm-hmm. had a kick-ass art style.
Mm-hmm.
It was AAA. It was cool.
And then it's total creative, actually. We got a lot of free time on that, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really exciting fun.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I still loved it, too, because even the executive producer, like, I could tell, smirked at me when I was like, yeah, I'm going to Toys for Bob. And, yeah.
Well, I was there when they saw the numbers that came out, so that smirk yeah, went.
You went won. You won.
You totally won, dude.
Well, I felt bad, because, I mean, even playing the, you know, XCOM game, I was like, man, this is not going to sell, like... Like if you don't even like playing it, you know the public's not gonna like it.
Yeah, so, this is why we were testing it right in the studio. Yeah.
The fact that you guys were like, everybody's like, this is gonna be a hit. We're gonna make bonus. I'm like, no, it's been in production for 7 years. They got to make a lot of money back.
You're gonna make some games over there. I don't know what you guys are making.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, but I guess you got to be around a few years and deal with certain people to kind of. Get that sixth sense, I guess, to
yeah
see it coming or know what's going on around you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, like, let's fast forward to that day, right? That mm-hmm. day when they gave you that check. I mean, was it at the time when you kind of heard that the game was selling well, that people are really responding to it? What was the setting like?
I think the coolest thing was that we found out a lot of people were collecting the toys, which was making the sales go up. So, yeah, for me, it was just great. 'Cause for me, when I, you know, finally got the bonus, I was like, yes, I can put more down on my house and put some in the bank. And I don't know if anybody owns a house, but every year you have to, you know, replace rotted wood, paint, you know.
Right, maintenance.
Fences, everything. So it was like, thank God I got something, you know. Otherwise, I feel like I understand why most people are in the game industry and they probably live in apartments or something. Or it's,
right.
I mean, we don't get paid for where we are, I feel.
Definitely. I mean, the Bay Area is definitely more expensive.
Yeah. Because I feel like a lot of people that even got bonuses weren't able to, you know, I think find a place.
Right.
Or maybe they didn't even want to. So I can't say I haven't talked to everyone. But I haven't noticed many new cars. So I can tell you that everybody's probably sitting on it because they know, you know, those.
I mean, you must love the area enough to stick around, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was your reason? Was it because you had a house? And
yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know if we want to get into this, but yeah, for me, like I say, I'm blown away with pricing, and I feel like the whole tech industry, aside from the game industry, is kind of, they make way more money than us.
Oh, Silicon Valley in general, yes.
So I feel like we are kind of below or maybe barely medium income in an area. So, right. So for me, it's not really the area. I wish more game studios would definitely, pick maybe cheaper cities or whatnot. Because even when I worked in San Francisco, right across from the Golden, from the ballpark right there,
mm-hmm.
Giants ballpark, you know, 90% of the people commuted, you know, 45 minutes to an hour to get there. But if you ask the studio heads, they're like, yep, everybody loves it, you know. And I'm like, no, they probably like coming to the city and going to restaurants and whatnot, but I don't know if they like commuting an hour to it. So I don't know. I think everybody's a little different. For me, I feel like studios need to be a little more aware of like the family, people they have and whatnot, and where to be located. And
I'm very interested to seeing how game companies start spreading out more. I mean, we're very concentrated in the Bay Area, in mm-hmm. LA, in Seattle, in Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually a very grouped mm-hmm. parts. Because even with the ones that are trying to get outside of that shell, mm-hmm. right, it's really taking a chance going with that company because you don't know how well they're doing, right? So you have to go to these kind of metro concentrated areas too.
Well, that brings me up to another point too, is yeah, like people with families and whatnot, they don't want to move, you know, once you're going, regardless of if, you know, there's a better area, which is why, which is why everybody, you know, should be on point at a studio. They should be on their game because you have a lot of people relying on, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to ask you, Brandon, really quick. You know, you're down in Redwood City, right? Down there?
No, I'm in Orange County now.
You went back. Okay.
Went back, yeah.
But yeah, that was really pricey down there, right? At Redwood City?
Oh, dude. The peninsula is like, I would say, 30% more expensive than the Marin County.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane.
Were they paying you guys enough to live down there or close to you?
Yeah, no. Like, we were, like, 20 minutes away from Facebook, you know, 30 minutes. Like, the closer you are to those companies, the crazier the prices, it seems. And it's spreading. That circle is spreading all over the Bay Area and is one of the reasons why even the natives that grew up in San Francisco can't live there anymore, which is insane.
But I bet if you ask your, the execs at Redwood City, they're like, everybody loves this area.
It's the best area ever. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a disconnect as far as pricing goes. So,
dude, how do these studios have QA? That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, that's punishment.
They live at the studio, that's why.
Like, I'm not even trying to make fun, you know what I mean? Because, like, I just don't understand
how that works. There is definitely a survivor minimum salary that people have to be paid to work at studios in the Bay Area, and understandably so. Like, how does, you know, QA stick around, or anybody down there stick around?
Dude, I'm gonna get all my financial, like, I'm seriously gonna hit up some of my old friends who are in QA, like, yo dude, how do you make it? Just break it down for me. Like, this is not to be insulting, I'm just straight up, because I was struggling. I couldn't do it. I had the GTFO as soon as possible.
Well, there was a Google programmer that made, like, on the Yahoo News, that was living out of his truck in the Google parking lot.
I think I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, like an engineer who was, like, 24 years old, which is actually pretty smart.
But he was saving money, though, right?
Was saving loads of money because Google provides free internet. They have a 24/7 buffet. And, dude, I would live there if I was single.
Yeah, but what's going to happen is he's going to save his $1 million, and he's going to be like, yes, a house.
Yeah. Well, that, or go to Texas and make something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do wish the game industry would allow you to, what is it called, telecommute a little more or whatever. Yeah.
You know, I am waiting more and more for that. I feel like once VR becomes a thing, like even now, like I really... I mean, Larry can probably speak in opposition of this somewhat, but, like, I feel for what we do, like, and even with the original IPs or whatever, like, we should be able to work from home. Like, I feel like most of the office problems is being in the office.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, because I know we all love being around people and we need that. Yeah. But there are times where, yeah, it's like, I'm trustworthy enough, I'm passionate, I want to make a quality game, but I also can't stand commuting every day down here or something like that. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, coming from the business standpoint, not yet. Like, if I'm working on a huge project where something getting out ahead of time or some sort of security breach could be the difference between our $5 million marketing campaign getting executed the way that we want versus, oh shit, they leaked our commercial on some shitty ass website. Now we need to leak our commercial for real instead of during the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. I can't see people working from home just yet if I'm working on, like, a top secret, you know, clandestine only project. Now, if we're working on, like, you know, something that we're going to put on Steam and we think it's going to do well. Like, if we're making, let's say, a game, like, let's just say, like, a Payday, right? Like, no one's really like, oh, I can't wait for the story secrets about Payday 3. You know what I mean? Like, maybe. But if I'm, like, top end, spending $250 million on this game or more, forget about it. You're in the studio. And that's me.
Yeah. Well, I understand the marketing. They have like a certain plan and they don't want people to fuck with it, and they have certain timing and rhythm or whatever. But in the end, like, what games have been leaked that hurt itself? Like, Half-Life 2 was leaked. Like, whole games have been leaked. Trailers are still being leaked. Mm-hmm. And to me, it has not hurt itself. To me, like, for the group of nerds that actually want to see it and check it out, they are the big spenders anyways.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is not a dig at, like, Hangar 13. But, yeah, even them, they're like, oh, it's a secret, it's a secret. And it's like, yeah. Oh, wow, you're doing Mafia 3. Yeah. It's not that big of a marketing, you know.
I feel really the age of gaming with this generation who shares everything, like gaming, showing themselves online all the time, twitching, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. This age is more about showing and keeping them in part of the loop. Like Kickstarter, yeah, or anything has proven that people want to be a part of the game-making process.
Yeah.
And I feel like the secretive, the holding things behind closed doors, like, I feel that that generation is old. I mean, that's us.
Yeah.
Like, before, like, after us, it's more like, you know, this is my update. We just updated a character. Check this out. You know, people, to me, that would drive more traffic and less risk. Like, you'll know three updates in if your game is shit because no one's liking it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you wouldn't have three-year games. Then you release it, and then it fails because no one really wanted it, right? If you think about it that way.
Well, speaking to kind of toward that point, and this is also on a little riff, is like I wish, too, that artists in this industry were a little more known, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like people might know designers or writers or something, creators, but nobody really knows. It's kind of like the comic industry. You know, you might buy a comic based on an artist. And I wish that at one point the game industry was a little bit like that, where they're like, oh, man, you know, Colin or Brandon's working on this game. I got to, you know.
Yeah.
Because that might help sales, too. I mean, with Darksiders, everybody kind of bought the art books and wanted the game because Joe Madureira, a popular comic artist, was working on it.
The best comic artist.
Yeah, I freaking love him.
Yeah, Joe Mad is the shit, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, I was jealous as hell, you know, but I wish that more people had that, because even at our last few that Brandon and I worked on, I loved how any time they had to do an interview, even if it was about art or anything, you always saw the junior producers or producers running to do it, and it's like, I think they want to hear from the actual people making this every once in a while, you know? Like, I feel
like... Well, I can tell you the best artist in the industry right now, and he's a programmer designer, which is Notch from Minecraft.
Oh.
Well, I mean, like, he's the guy behind Minecraft, and to me, like, he's single-handedly made, like, an art form that was kind of shitty to us, but then it became an art style.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with you, like, having an artist sell a game, I mean, not too much of that. Like,
well, not sell a game, but, yeah. You know,
being the reason why you buy a game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to change.
Because I would definitely, there's definitely times, trust me, I'm sure like most artists were like, oh, I would love to be able to design everything and just make my own game.
Right.
It's just, I think people need to realize it takes too much time to make art sometimes.
Right. I mean, it is like a dedicated job for each discipline. So, I mean,
I would love to make my game. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, you go ahead. I mean, with your current stance over at Toaster Bob and everything, and I mean, were there certain things that you did with your bonus that you've always wanted to do, or have you always been like saving type just in case? And you just like,
yeah, I've always been the saving type, but I feel like, yeah, lately I'm definitely saving, because like I've always, you know, even since I left college, I wanted to make a, you know, very, God, what is it called? Educated attempt or whatever at, you know, breaking into the comic book industry. Because there I feel like I can at least stand behind my product. You know, people will say, this is Collins, you know, did the artwork. There won't be like 20 other people taking the credit or assigned to, you know, the art titles. It's, you know, I get credit for what I did.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, I want to go back to that because the game industry, I feel like you get no credit. It's you can bust your ass as much as you want, and you still get paid as much as another guy. And nobody helps prop you up or propel you into better roles.
It sounds like you need to find a programmer, man.
I would love to find people, but right now, I guess that's the thing, is I definitely need time off at some point to do a video game or do my own comic, which I still love to draw. You know, I prefer drawing sometimes more than sitting behind a computer. Yeah, it's definitely tough, man. I think in this area where you need a lot of money, it makes it tough to try to just, you know, take 6 months to a year off or something.
And start doing something, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of rent money or mortgage money or whatever that's going.
That's how they get you, dude. That's how they get you, dude. Stay behind the desk. Just pay you enough.
Well, speaking of payments and mortgages, we need to pay some bills here at the Game Dev Unchained podcast. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
All right, guys, so it's like this. Alden Filion, the art director from Into the Stars, is going to be hosting our next Game School online GSO Live event. He's going to be taking questions and answering anything he possibly can to help students or professionals alike get information on getting into the game industry. And most importantly, he's going to be talking about the process of being the art director on a successful indie title such as Into the Stars. We're going to get a look at some of his workflows, get some tips and tricks, and lots of advice. It goes down this Sunday, the 27th of March, on GameSchoolOnline.com. It will be live, it will be aired, it will be shared. Hope to see you there.
And we are back and just that much more rich because we... No, just kidding. In the episode about the big bonus, the bonus lifestyle, let's get right back into it for this last 15 minutes of the Game Dev Unchained podcast. I'm Larry Charles. We got Brandon Pham and Mr. Colin Fogle. Let's go. Colin, I got to ask you, man. What's the first thing that you do when you see a life-changing bonus hit your bank account? What's the very first thing you did? How did you react?
The very first thing I did was, to see how much I could save. But I also, I guess for me too, I also broke my sisters off a little bit of that cash. I definitely feel like anybody that makes a big chunk, you know, even a couple grand or anything for their loved ones or something is worth it.
Dude, I didn't know you were into black women, dude. That's awesome.
Definitely don't be stingy out there, you know, even if you, I don't know, for me. So for me, I gave my my two sisters a little bit. Mm-hmm. My mom was totally against that. Put a bunch in the bank account because, this industry is so, hit and miss, you know. Yeah. That's why I say to people, like, try your hardest to at least make a quality product. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, if you get laid off or you don't make money, at least you made something that everybody will know or recognize or be like, oh, my God, you came from that team. That was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And, save that money because, you might have to move. You might be out of work for a few months, a little while before you find another place. And maybe one day you might want to take time off to actually make your own little mini game, which would be a great portfolio or demo. Yep. And who knows, it might even allow you to make your own game. Someone might pay you.
This is what I'm hearing. Like, you're obviously a veteran. Mm-hmm. And an untrained... a game artist would see the type of money that you saw and be spending it on whatever.
Wacoms like in every room.
So how did you develop such a strong sense of saving? Like, were you caught with your pants down before? Like, you got laid off? Like, what was it? Were you always like that?
For me, I have a very... caring, strict mother, where she definitely constantly, you know, ever since, I left, she's like, save money. Don't go on vacation. What do you mean you're going here? You know? Kind of like, don't live, save money. And I try to do a little of both, but that's where that stuck with me. Because I know some people, they just, you know, it doesn't matter how much they have or whatnot, they'll blow it. But for me, it was mainly thanks to my mom and because I did want quality time one day to maybe work on my own stuff. Yeah. Because it seems like at every studio I go to, they might hire you because you're talented, but there is a 90% chance they won't use any of your ideas, your creativity. They just kind of like that you're there and you can make models and stuff look good off of their concepts or whatever based off their ideas.
Right.
So it's that's where it can be important if you're young. I'm sure, Brandon, you guys have maybe touched on this, but when you're young and looking for a job, that's where you want to attempt to find that studio that fits your style.
Right.
Whereas for me, you know, like I said, I went to a sports game studio, which really wasn't my style, but
right.
And it was a good way in, but yeah.
I mean, it was great because you stayed at the company for 7 years mm-hmm. for the stability part, but it was so early in your career where you were trying to like try different things that you kind of got itch to do something else, and you did, and which kind of went into the style that you wanted, which led to your big payoff. And in the end, though, like if it's not a game that you single-handedly made with a smaller group of developers, it's never going to be 100% yours. You're always going to be a 10% contribution to the project. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, your desire to always make something that you want to put out there, I feel, I don't know. I mean, Larry, how do you feel? Do you feel like most developers feel that way, where they want to go out there and do it themselves? Or do you feel there's a good percentage that just want to get by and go home and do something else?
Well, I think it
is not game related.
Yeah. I think it all boils down to appreciation and value. So, for example, if people feel like what they're doing at work is being appreciated, especially in a creative medium, then maybe they may not be as likely to go out and apply their creativity on their own stuff because they feel like they're getting the chance to exercise and see their ideas come to fruition. So if they have that like that itch to do those type of things, it's getting satisfied through their work already. But I'm not going to just say that that's a general statement that applies to all people, because some people are just entrepreneurial and ambitious, and regardless of them being appreciated at work or not, like such in my case, I still want to like further my craft at home or develop my own ideas and strategies, because I may be working on a sports game when I have some great ideas for like some RPG mechanics, you know?
Yeah. I
totally agree with that. Yes.
Because I do feel when you go in the industry, there's two types of developers. There's the one that's like, oh man, you know, I love Uncharted. I've always wanted to work on Uncharted. Mm-hmm. And eventually you're going to hit that goal. If you keep driving at it, you're going to work on that franchise. But then what's next? And it's always going to lead back to that developer in you that wanted to make his own game one day, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and a message too to game developers is that they really need to definitely notice the individuals that do have the passion and do want to create more, and actually give them an avenue at work to do that. Because
right.
I feel like most of the times they just kind of go with whoever talks the loudest in a room, even though they might not have the talent or anything or any ideas, you know. And that's where, yeah, these people are like, okay, I really don't care if I work here, work there, who gives a crap, you know, I'd leave any day, you know, and get a job anywhere else. So it's definitely recognize, try to, yeah, help those out that really show initiative and show the passion, yeah.
Yeah.
The others that don't, you know, don't give them too much credit or pay them too much peace of mind, you know.
I mean, there's definitely developers or game companies that have nurtured that talent and turned it into the Vive, like that or like, you know, little test projects internally that became like mega hits. I mean, I feel like the best studios are those with the most unique, innovative ideas.
That's very rare, though, I will say.
Yeah.
I've been at a lot of studios, and even if I get put on the – which I was put on a demo. What is it, a game demo?
Right. Like a Vertigo Slice, yeah.
Yeah, and I was supposed – you know, my art director knew – this is when I was on the game – you know, the sports studio, and he knew because I always brought in my – comic book art and everything and showed it to the artist at work. So he knew I was creative, always working on stuff, and he put me on this demo team. And then I was just totally shunned in the meetings. It was like everybody and their grandma was allowed to talk over me or come up with ideas. And it's like, wow, you know, I'm supposed to be the artist here that's drawing creative, and nobody wants to hear anything I have. So it was kind of like, at times like that, that's when you need a good production staff or art director, someone to kind of say, hey, no, we need to listen to this individual or take a few ideas from this person. Right.
I mean, what's that term like creating by committee? Is that right?
For me, it seems like it's creating by whoever can yell the loudest and ignore the other people in the room. You know, I mean, I always tried working with everybody. I was like, okay, you don't like my idea, I'll work with you. But in the end, if it's just constantly, you know, all them.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of like, okay, well, I will just sit in the corner and wait till you guys tell me what to do, and I'll go home and do my own stuff again, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like that part right there is is a big problem within our industry. Like, we're growing at such an exponential size where it's like the voice is getting lost in meetings like those. Like, you can't really be creative and hear that person in the back who may have like a revolutionary idea, but like there's 500 people yelling it at the same time, or like there's a special group that you always rely on that Colin's not in.
Yeah, it's a learning experience. That's why I think, like I said, I always, when I got my bonus and everything, it's like, you know, I'm saving up because I obviously have to do it on my own, you know. One day I will have to do that. So
if you can go back and talk to 20-year-old Colin, who's trying to get in the industry, who's loving the limelight of these big franchises making awesome games, like, what would you say? What warning would you give them?
I would say in college, definitely try harder. I mean, for me, I definitely didn't know what to expect in the real world, so I didn't take it quite seriously yet. And so definitely also be ready to make multiple portfolios, you know, don't rush any piece. Mm-hmm. And from there, if you do all of that and you have quality work that work on stuff that you really just want to create and do. I mean, I have a lot of people that they're like, oh my God, I don't know what to put in my portfolio. What should I make? And it's like, you should know what you want to make. You know, if you want to do cars or vehicles, do that. If you want to do people, do that. If you want to do environments, do that. Don't try to please everybody, and, you know, stick with what you're good at, what you can make look awesome, something that you definitely want to spend quality time and will put quality time on. And from there, that's probably the best route for studios that match your style. They'll find you, you know, when you send them your work, they're like, you know, they can tell if, you know, you do realistic stuff or more fantasy, and might be easier to get, you know, a nice fit out of college.
Right.
But that's what I would have told myself.
No, you want to finish your thought before I come in with the next question?
Practice interviewing. For God's sakes, practice interviewing. I don't know how or where, but...
Well, how did you get better? Like, eventually you got better, right?
Hey, thanks, Brandon.
No, I don't know if I did get better. I think just over the years I got older, and then when I was forced, you know, 7 years later to interview, I had to do a few before I got in the groove, you know? Okay. And then I realized, hey, I know how to answer all these questions because I've been in the industry, but early on, I don't know how you would do that. Right out of college, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, Larry, do you have any tips? If were you laughing?
Because I'm waiting to ask my question.
Go for it, man.
Well, this is a lead-in. We can still ask it.
No, I'll indulge. Tips on interviewing? Yeah, get with somebody who's professional in your industry that's doing your job. Like, if you have some sort of mentor or former lead or colleague,
text online.
No, I'm serious though. Like, I would talk to designers who were ahead of me and like ask them specific questions, or I would talk to them about doing mock interviews because they know design, right? And I'm a designer, so they know what kind of questions that I'm most likely going to be asked because they interview people all the time. It's the questions that they ask, you know? So that was my tip. That was my strategy. I found more senior designers and I talked to them about mock interviews, and maybe it'd be 10 minutes, maybe it'd be 30 minutes. You never know, but that was a good way to help me practice. So
that's perfect. Yeah, I I was shocked when I had a few people write me and ask questions. I was like, I would have never thought of this, you know, or how did you even find me? But thanks to LinkedIn, I guess, college students can reach out. And
I mean, it's one of those things that I wish more colleges would have classes on.
Yes.
Like, you never see that on the curriculum. Like, it should be a class dedicated to interviews, to talking to people. Yeah.
That'd be funny. Bring us a list of 100 people you plan on bugging. Professionals.
So my next question for you is, now everyone here has gone through like the mega bonus, let's just say. Is there anything about the process that you currently think it should just be changed? And if so, how would you change it?
Process on bonuses?
Yes. So, like, you know, we talked about feeling a little slighted that, you know, you contributed more than you felt like you had gotten your cut of the pie for, right? Mm-hmm. Or you knew that the studio was like, wow, we can't afford to, or not that we can't afford, we're just not going to pay X millions of dollars to these developers who allowed us to even make X millions of dollars or billions of dollars. Rightfully so, we're going to screw them out of this. Is there... How would you propose a way that, you know, maybe the bonus structure could change so that it benefits everybody? Or what would you do to just change it so that it benefits you more?
Well, for me, one thing I wish they would have done is, because I know that they had a cap. Mm-hmm. And then I know that they were nice enough, you know, I mean, that's cool. You know, some companies were nice enough where they were like, okay, we're going to pay them out their max and then we'll put the leftover for next year. Mm-hmm. And so that would have been nice if they were like, wow, we made billions. We're going to put it in this big, you know, random fund. And then every year we're going to just give bonuses. Because, I mean, I can tell you guys right now that I don't expect anything in the future. I think, you know, the competition, everything, and, you know, once teams get too bloated and whatnot, it – the overall cost just becomes too much, and you know that bonuses aren't going to be coming. So, I wish they would have probably, like I said, just kept more and sprinkled it out throughout the few years, because I'm sure they could have easily have done that. But at the same time, I know that they made this company to make tons of money, and they're probably enjoying it. So,
I don't know why you guys complaining. I'm good.
Nothing I can do about it. But I mean, how much did you guys get, Brandon? You got a bonus from?
We both got bonuses, but we were what, the 9th Call of Duty, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously, from Call of Duty Modern Warfare, that whole lawsuit, we won't comment too much on it. But things have changed, and I really wanted to highlight the point that I really do feel, Toys for Bob, with your Skylanders, that you were probably the last group that actually got a decent big bonus.
Yeah.
I can't think of any multi-billion franchise after that would pay out their employees, except for, you know, if we're counting out mobile games, right?
Well, I think AAA. That speaks toward the people that own the studio, or even our studio, because like I said, when I got money, it wasn't a lot, but I was still like, oh my God, I'm going to send my sisters, like, you know, 10 G's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like some studio heads, they're like that and they're not. You know, they're like, I don't care to give, you know, people extra money. And some are like, hey, why not? We made enough. Even if I sprinkle a little, I'll still have a ton left over. Right. So I feel like they were definitely gracious. But, you know, like anything else, it could be a lot more gracious, knowing that the state
billions,
45%. Yeah. No, the state takes 45%.
Yeah, that too. I think at the very least, just pay the taxes for us.
That was a shock, boy.
All I'm looking for is just the studio to be fair.
You know what I mean?
And like, honestly, like, put it, if regardless of how many copies we think the game is going to sell, I want to know the math on day one before I start putting in any time or effort. You know, like, how it's going to break down. You know, how everything is going to work. And the last thing I want to hear is cap. Fuck a cap. There's no cap for you. You know what I mean? Yeah. No one's stopping you from buying Ferraris and shit. Like, why you got to be that way to us?
I mean, I think to be fair, like, if there is a formula, share the formula.
Yeah.
I think if anything, that would help squash any bias, like any sourness afterwards. It's because it's like, all right, this before we ship, this is what the math that we're using. It's like, oh, okay.
This is how it works.
This is how it works? Okay, good. Instead of like waiting months after and you're expecting something huge, and then it's nowhere near your expectation. I think that's the part that hurts.
And then the stories you're expected to swallow as they're explaining why you got screwed or what you're dealing with. I will say this. The only reason that I don't like a cap is because I just don't think it's fair. I think if we're helping you do something, the compensation should be like equal to what we're putting in, you know? And so a cap is basically saying, regardless of how hard you're going to work on this, because you have to work to get it done, you're only going to get up to X amount, right? Like, we're not allowed to put in up to X amount of hours of work. You know what I mean? Right, the work is until the project is done. So therefore, split the pie in the same fashion. Now, I understand as a business owner myself, the last thing I want to do is incentivize people to leave the company, even if I'm doing a good thing, right? Like, if I think the team is great and I want to continue to make Call of Duty games or Skylander games or any of the other games that this collective of the three of us have made that have paid a bonus to us, I would say, I'm not going to give you a cap, but like you said, Colin, I'm going to institute a, like, this game has paid X amount of royalties. Let's say you're supposed to get $5 million. I'm not just going to give you $5 million in one check, right? But what I will do is I'll say, okay, I'm going to split this up where we give up to $50,000 a month for however, just forever.
Like lottery payments.
Exactly. Yeah. And you now have a bank account that has $5 million in it, and every month I'm going to give you $50,000 of that.
Yeah.
Right?
I think if anything, people just don't want to be treated like children.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just treat us like an adult. And if your main reason to keep me staying at a company is to keep my money from me, like, I feel like that's a bad, you're creating a bad friendship right there, man.
But, well, I'm sorry, I just want to jump back in. You kind of have to look at it from that standpoint, though, in my opinion, because I'm making sure that you're getting what you deserve, but you have to protect the business. I think it would be very foolish to just dump millions of dollars into people's pockets who are doing manual labor and then expect that everyone's going to want to show up and do the next game.
Well, that's where it also speaks to, you got to cater to the quality, passionate people, because I think every studio everybody's at, there's a group that really couldn't care.
Yeah.
And those, yeah, you shouldn't really worry about keeping them happy, you know, paying money, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, God, what was I going to say too? That was another point too, is I hear all the time from like execs, you know, like even Activision anywhere, where they say, you know, we really want to keep our people, we really want to keep our quality people, this and that. But yeah, if you make a game with a lot of bonuses, this and that, you're not really giving them an incentive. You know, that's where it becomes the Wild West, where we're like, I don't care where I go if I'm just going to make the same anywhere.
Yeah.
And the product could fail. So, yeah.
I mean, I feel in the end, like, it would serve the company better to nurture talent, to keep talent happy. Yeah. Like, if people want to make that money to leave, those people will leave anyways. That's the thing. Like, they will go independently, but on good terms. Like, I love you guys. I'm looking forward to working with you guys. I will recommend everything to you. Versus, like, you kept my money from you. I'm stuck here. Right? I'm doing this stupid game because you're telling me to, and it's the fifth one, you know? Like, I feel like that's more poisonous to a company. Like, because obviously people might leave, at least the really good ones, right?
That aren't you don't want, you
the really don't good the ones good will ones leave anyways. Yeah, the really good ones have no problem finding a better job. That's just fact. Yes. And then the ones that are pretty good, but they're stuck, are going to poison the well. I mean, that's why would you want to do that? Like, you're just hurting your talent. And then what happens? Like, you're going to have a hard time hiring talent because you have a bad reputation of just openly denying people their money. Like, I feel, I understand your point, Larry. Like, like, there is, you got to create an incentive to keep people to stay. But I don't think keeping money from them is the best way to do it. But, like, filtering money may be a way to do it, like, just lottery way. But, like, even then, like, the reason behind it primarily is to, like, I don't want you to leave. I want you here forever to keep making me hits and making me rich.
Sure. I don't necessarily think that my strategy is keeping money from them. It's more like, this is how you'll get paid. You know what I mean? So, like, you did this thing and it made all this money. I'm saying, okay, here's how we're going to break down how payments work. You tell them this ahead of time, like, your bonuses will be split up into monthly payments until it runs out. and the most we pay is X amount. I'm pretty sure if I put that in a contract ahead of time, somebody'd be like, okay, cool. Like, I'm down.
You know? You will keep, the happy guys. And I like, just laying it down beforehand.
Yeah, that's the key.
That's the key thing.
Let me know ahead of time how exactly you plan on distributing funds and how the math works out that the funds will be decided upon distribution.
Versus my Ferrari's too loud. I can't exactly hear what you're complaining about. What money problems?
Oh, well. So, hey, we are over an hour into the podcast. And Mr. Colin Fogel, as our wonderful thank you gift to anyone who comes to the show and gives knowledge and their time and their energy, we always shut up and just say the audience is yours. If there's anything that you would like to promote, advertise, or call some attention to, or just one last awesome thing before you go, the floor is yours.
I don't really know. I would like to give a shout out to Workaholics. That's now one of my new favorite shows to watch. Season 6 is awesome. I don't know. If I ever have a product or get my store online, it's going to be at colinfogel.net. But I finally have a store on there. I just have not gone and updated it, so I don't know if people should go quite yet. Get out there, buy all the new Skylander games. I want to give a shout out to Visual Concepts for taking a chance and hiring me after 9 months.
All right, there you go.
I definitely still love a lot of people there, and I still know a lot of people there. But yeah, other than that, I'm not really sure what to say right now.
Do you have any comics that you worked on that you people can?
No. I mean, with the way the game industry goes and my time afterward, I haven't worked on anything quality. I have worked on comics, but nothing I want anybody to see.
Okay. We'll X this part out.
But I guess keep an eye out for me because I do plan on doing Comic Cons here and there. I just don't know where or who let me in, but I'm hoping the Bay Area or, God, at least Washington, Oregon, maybe they'll have some cons where I can get in. But there I will have my Dark Holidays comic, hopefully, still with me, and my new Hazel project that I'm working on, futuristic.
There you go, yeah.
Futuristic, yeah. I rarely do women, so I was like, I'm going to do a sexy, futuristic, woman agent. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
But it's so cool you guys do a podcast. I'm glad I could be on it. I hope a lot of people listen to this and get a little educated.
We'll listen to the 20-year-old Colin.
Don't expect too much money, or at least try to move to a cheaper town. I hear. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, Colin, thank you very much for being a part of Game Dev Unchained, the podcast. I've got the mic. I'm Larry Charles. Good night.
Hey, thank you for everyone joining us. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you so much. This was Colin Fogel. Thank you, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.